We've been hearing a lot about climate change lately, and this morning we look at the issue as it relates to migration of Pacific Islands and the health of its inhabitants. We sat down with Laura Brewington, who's a research fellow with the East-West Center, to talk about a $500,000 grant that it secured to do just that.
So the East-West Center has had a climate change adaptation program for a number of years now, and we have a variety of different sources of funding for the work that we do. All of it is focused on climate change and adaptation, and it's located here in Hawaii as well as in the U.S.-affiliated Pacific Islands. So this particular project is actually building off of work that we've been doing already in the USAPI looking at climate change and human migration, which has become a hot topic lately in the climate arena. There's a lot of images that you see of Pacific Islands, you know, that looks like they're sinking as the sea levels are rising. It's very dramatic. And so there are a lot of questions, specifically in the international arenas. Is climate change really causing people to migrate? And if so, you know, what are the mechanisms for migration? And here in Hawaii and the U.S.-affiliated Pacific Islands, we have a very unique framework for migration because of the Compact of Free Association, which allows residents and citizens of countries like the Marshall Islands to move freely to the U.S., to Hawaii, as well as the mainland, where they can be employed, they can receive health care, they're allowed to serve in the military, and they can also pursue educational opportunities. And so what we're seeing, and what we have seen for quite some time, is that members of these compact states, which include places like Palau, the Marshall Islands, the Federated States of Micronesia, and others, we're seeing people coming to Hawaii or the U.S. mainland for a multitude of different reasons. And the question that sort of drove this this prior study that we've been working on for about 3 years now was, is climate also a factor? And so, long story short, some of the preliminary analysis of the data that was collected for that work last year, in fact, has shown that communities in the Marshall Islands aren't necessarily saying, yeah, we're moving because the sea levels are rising, or, you know, we've got to get out of here because we don't have, you know, healthy crops growing anymore because of saltwater inundation, things like that. But when people have left and they've settled in places like Hawaii, those people who were interviewed say, well, now we're here and then we're talking to our family and our friends at home and we're not really sure if we want to go back. Because, you know, the ocean is crashing at our doorstep, basically.
I know that there is also concern about the drinking water.
Mm-hmm. Right. So water resources are very limited in atoll communities like the Marshall Islands. The entire archipelago is made up of 29 coral atolls, which are really low in elevation. I mean, maybe a few feet above sea level. And that includes Majuro, which is the capital of the Marshall Islands. And it's where about 50% of the 53,000 inhabitants live. And so that's a lot of water demand for very, very limited resources. The sort of the freshwater lens, which is what we call the big pool of potable drinking water that comes from rain, is extremely thin. And it's, you know, becoming increasingly encroached upon by salt water as sea levels rise. And during times of drought, the already limited water resources become even more constrained. And that's when we see a lot of disease outbreaks.
Right, so there are all these different stressors that are happening or they're playing into what's going on in the environment and then also in just people's lives and their health.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's just kind of map out where are a lot of folks migrating to?
So a lot of the Marshall Islanders, because of the Compact of Free Association, many of them, if they live on the outer atolls, first they might move from an outer atoll, which may have extremely limited resources, to a place like Majuro to pursue, you know, educational opportunities, new jobs, and perhaps better health care as well. And then from Majuro, that seems to be kind of the jumping off point to go to a place like the United States, where, again, they can move freely. They can work, they can go to school, and they can receive health care, et cetera. So a lot of the people who are leaving the Marshall Islands are going to places in the United States where they already have friends and family. One of the big locations for that is the Tyson Chicken Factory in Arkansas, which might sound kind of surprising, but again, if you think about it, you know, if you're looking for a place where you know you can get a job and you have family members who are saying, hey, come out here, you know, this is where this is where it is right now. It makes it an easier decision for you to go.
Yeah, it's a little cold, but
right. Yeah, it's a big climate shift there. But we're also finding the largest populations of Marshallese are coming to the state of Hawaii, in part because it's closer to home. But there's also an established community of Marshall Islanders already living in the state. And then there are other pretty substantial populations in the Pacific Northwest, so in Washington State and in Oregon. And all told, I believe the numbers are somewhere in the 20,000s of Marshall Islanders who are not living in the country. And when you consider that the whole population of the country is 53,000 people,
wow,
that's a huge number of migrants.
So let's talk, too, about the health part of this study, because we often hear that, diabetes is an issue, and I believe it's tuberculosis.
Right. So when we conducted the initial survey of households in the Marshall Islands, as well as people who had migrated, some of the top reasons for migrating included health impacts. And in fact, for most of the households in the Marshall Islands, when we were asking people if they were thinking about leaving, their number one reason for talking about leaving was health. And getting into the nitty-gritty of what that might have to do with climate change is trickier. There are very direct impacts on health as a result of climate change. For example, you know, a terrible extreme event that could cause injury or a mental health problem, for example. And then there are a lot of indirect impacts. So I mentioned drier weather and drought, which is a common occurrence in the Marshall Islands, especially during El Nino years. What happens, and if you imagine someone cutting off your tap at home, what's the first thing that you stop doing? You probably stop washing your hands. And so those kind of very small but important steps that people take to protect their health become exacerbated during times of climate stress. And so what we're seeing definitely are these patterns of people kind of moving around, looking for better health care, looking for healthier living conditions. And we're just wondering, you know, is there a direct link there to changes in climate? And if so, and even if there's not, you know, how can we establish kind of a win-win situation with the healthcare professionals in the Marshall Islands so that they can better anticipate changes in climate or extreme events such as drought, to be prepared for those before they happen? There's a constellation of aid organizations, the Red Cross, AusAid, for example, in New Zealand, and the U.S. military as well, who come in times of disasters and, you know, provide very, you know, basic things like water and sanitation kits. They provide desalinization, basically tanks that are portable and that can go around to the different atolls. And so it's been a really interesting project as we've spun it up, because what we're trying to do is to help better coordinate those aid institutions and kind of provide relief before the fact, as opposed to waiting until the event has already occurred. So this particular aspect of the study is going to be looking at healthcare professionals in the Marshall Islands, finding out what climate information they already have access to and how they could better use what's available. There's a Marshall Islands climate dashboard that's already out. It's online. It can give you up to 6 months of an outlook in terms of, you know, are you anticipating a dry event or anticipating very heavy rainfall? But when we've talked with health professionals just as scoping for the project, we found that, you know, sure, they know that that stuff is out there, but they don't know where to find it. You know, they're not in touch with their National Weather Service offices. And it's perfectly understandable. These health professionals are very overtaxed. There are not very many of them in the Marshall Islands. And it's just a matter of hoping that we can provide better coordination in that, you know, in that arena, in the Marshall Islands. And then similarly here in Hawaii, because we're seeing so many people coming from the Marshall Islands, you know, this is kind of the first place that they go when they leave, there may be unusual or atypical health factors that the communities here in Hawaii are dealing with. And like most other places, you know, if you arrive and you're sick and you're not sure where to go to get healthcare, you're going to ask your friends and family members. And so they tend to congregate in certain community centers and see the trusted doctors that their family and friends have seen before. And so, again, it presents us with an opportunity to say, okay, you know, we're seeing people, you know, migrating because of this constellation of factors. How can we, you know, better inform you as providers to prepare for influxes of people coming potentially as a result of changes in climate?
Right, and you'll be focusing primarily on the community here in Hawaii?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, and then so how far does this take you? How many years?
It's a 2-year project, and what we're really hoping will come out of this, in addition to you know, providing better sources of information and linking up some of these groups that may not already be connected, such as the climate and weather forecasting services and healthcare policymakers and practitioners. Ideally, in terms of interventions, a lot of the U.S. affiliated independent nations are looking at pursuing green climate fund opportunities, which, you know, is on the order of millions of dollars and can be used for things like infrastructure development, which is something that this project, you know, it's out of the scope of this project, which is primarily research, but things like these types of research projects can really help inform and address the needs that could go into a bigger project proposal.
That was Laura Brewington, a researcher, talking about migration and health as it relates to climate change in the Pacific, particularly in the Marshall Islands.